Just about 6:07 on the Central Coast. Good evening. I'm Dave Congleton. This is Hometown Radio, kicking off the 6 o'clock hour for this Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. We're here all the way till 7 o'clock. Hope you are as well. Tomorrow, Rosh Wright is going to be here. Let's talk about the Airbnb experience. She runs it through her house. Some controversy with it. Not so much the city policy. I just want experiences from you. Have you done the Airbnb routine yet? If so, what was that experience like? We'll hear from Rosh. We'll hear from you. Dr. Don Morris is back with us on Friday. Stay with us throughout the week. The Dave Congleton Show. We are your hometown radio talk show. This hour, always good to spend time with journalist Matt Hoy. We invited Matt to come in and talk about a couple different subjects. He joins us now. Matt, good evening. Thanks for coming back.
Nice to be back.
Let's remind people about your blog.
Blogs at hoystory.com, H-O-Y-S-T-O-R-Y.
What do you blog about?
Politics, society, just about anything that catches my fancy.
All right. Let's start by saying a few words about Slow Stringer, a.k.a. Matthew Frank. And I just want to start by saying I cannot believe how many people are talking about the tragedy of this young man's death. I came in here yesterday. I go into the store today. Everyone is talking about this tragedy.
Yeah, I didn't know him personally.
Nor did I.
I'd followed his work. It's obvious that he was a guy who was out there chasing the news. Old-fashioned type, report. You know, nowadays, you've got too many reporters who sit behind a desk and pick up their phone, and they never see the outside. And he was a guy who was always going out there, chasing the story, looking for photos, taking video. He was out there seeing the outside. And I think it's a terrible tragedy that, you know, he was lost so soon.
And for people who for some reason haven't followed, it was a young man. He's only like 30 years old. I think he just turned 30 this month. Matthew Frank. Tribune has a nice article about him. Always had this passion. And for the last couple of years, he had a Facebook page called Slow Stringer.
Right.
And he would go out. Any kind of police, he must have had a scanner by his bed.
Yeah, when I worked as a reporter in the dark ages back at the Lompoc Record, you know, I had a scanner by my bed, had that thing kind of on low volume all night, and if it started squawking, it would wake me up, and I'd go out and take, you know, shoot pictures of, you know, house things like you did, you know, a house fire.
Right. And that's what happened. He was on his way to a house fire. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning. I hate to speculate. He might have fallen asleep or dozed off or whatever, but it's just a tragedy.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I was kind of always curious personally how he kind of made a living. It turns out, you know, he owned a motorcycle repair shop. And frankly, that's the kind of thing that you cannot make a living doing the photography and whatnot that he did.
Right.
It's obvious that was his passion.
But it's also clear, Matt, that he touched a lot of people with his work. And maybe a statement of all of us in the local media and the what we're doing or not doing, that so many people came to depend upon a volunteer to find out what was happening with any kind of police or fire or public safety situations.
Yeah, it says something about, you know, the local media. And again, you know, he was making his money on that motorcycle business, which allowed him to do this sort of thing. You know, over the past decade or so, the number of journalists in newsrooms across this country has diminished. And there are fewer and fewer people who are trying to cover more and more news. And, you know, this is where you see the strain, that he was able to kind of fill a very necessary niche that was needed in this community.
And that's exactly the quote that's attributed to him. Somebody asked him why he was doing this, and he said, I saw the need.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined the Telegram Tribune in 1989. Back in those days, just assuming there was an internet there, people wouldn't have needed a Matthew Frank because we've got all these reporters. We'll go out and cover the news. But now everyone's cut back, and there aren't the reporters at the Tribune or KSBY or here at the news talk station. We don't have any reporters.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy like Matthew Frank stepped in, and the chimney fire work that he did last summer, that to me, that's deserving of some kind of award. I'd like to see him be nominated for some kind of journalism award for the coverage he gave on that fire.
It would certainly be nice. The kind of barrier to that, a downside of that, is most of the journalism awards, it's a club.
Yeah.
And he was a stringer. He did it on his own. He wasn't employed by anyone. If he could make a few, few bucks selling, photos to news, newspapers, or, video to local TV stations, great. But
he really showed us up.
Oh yeah.
I put my name on that list too. He really showed us up. He showed us how it could be done. Just go cover the story, get the facts, be there for people, and be a 24/7 source where people could come to for reliable information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But is that, last question on this, is that the model for the future where we have citizen journalists?
I think that's been happening for the past decade where you've had citizen journalists. Sometimes some of the best reporting you can get is from someone who goes to an event, has a blog, and publishes pictures and video and writes about what they saw.
Right.
And this may be foreign to most people, but there was a woman up in the San Francisco Bay Area who went by the online pseudonym Zombie.
Zombie, of all things. Good credibility there.
But, photos and videos speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And she would cover protests, and that's up in the Bay Area. And you learned a lot. And you learned probably more from the stuff that you found on her blog, which I think was zombietime.com, than you would from necessarily newspapers and television stations in the Bay Area.
Now, I know, for example, over in Cambria, there's a woman who runs a Facebook page called Cambria Currents. And she provides coverage for everything happening in Cambria.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she has quite a large following. But there's another example.
Yeah, there's a desire for news. The problem is finding a way to pay for it.
Yeah. All right, Matt Hoy is with us. We're spending the hour talking about what's happening and not happening in local journalism. We'll pick up some other topics as we continue and welcome your phone calls as well. I would stick around. I'm Dave Congleton. This is KVEC News Talk 920 and the new FM 96.5. We are talking about what's happening in local journalism on this hour of the Dave Congleton Show. My guest continues to be Matt Hoy. We start off talking a little bit about the untimely, unfortunate, tragic death of Matthew Frank, a.k.a. Slow Stringer, who really set a standard, as far as I'm concerned, for local reporting. If you want in on the conversation at any point this hour, just pick up the phone, give us a call. We welcome your calls, 543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. I'd be remiss, Matthew, as we come back to you, if I didn't get your reaction to the $1.2 million verdict against Karen Vealing, Dan Blackburn in the libel case with Cal Coast News.
That's a big amount of money. It's scary. I didn't read the story. I read the Tribune editorial. I read the Tribune story on it. I listened to the podcast of your show last week. The interesting thing that struck me about that whole thing was the claim that this was supposed to be the first in a series of stories. And if you've got the facts, if you've got the goods, there was no reason to stop after the first story.
Exactly.
You either pull it or you go forward. And it reminded me of my wife has put it in safekeeping. I don't know why. But I've got a Pulitzer Prize, little fake kind of medal, yeah, given to everyone who was on the staff of the San Diego Union-Tribune back when we won the Pulitzer for National Reporting for uncovering Rep. Randy Duke Cunningham's corruption. And it reminded me of that because one of the first stories that the Union-Tribune ran on that talked about how Cunningham had sold his home to a defense contractor who had bought it for, I think it was about $200,000 more than Cunningham had bought it for just a couple years later, or a couple years earlier. And there was all this nefarious sorts of things, discussion in that first story about it. And this was at the time when the housing market was booming. And I'm sitting there reading that first story, and I'm a little bit, you know, I'm always a little bit skeptical of just about anything I read. And I thought, well, yeah, but what was the market like in that neighborhood? You know, you've said he sold it for $200,000, and then a couple of years later, you know, the defense contractor sold it at a loss. But at that time, what was the market like? What were the comparable houses in that area going for? Was this way out of line, or was this happening all over the place? And it wasn't in that first story. It was in the second or third story. And so if you've got the goods, you've got to kind of keep on just going with it.
Yeah, I think Karen made a strategic error in not following up. Because like you said, Matt, if they've got the goods, show it. Put it up. So it sends the message, rightly or wrongly, that they're not as confident of the story as they thought.
Very much so.
And then if that's the case, why leave the first installment up? Just take it down.
Yeah.
Issue a clarification or a retraction or whatever, and there wouldn't have been any lawsuit.
And the thing is odds are if you, oops, we made a mistake, and you take it down very quickly, there's, if they do go forward with the lawsuit against you, the amount of damages they're going to get out of you is so much smaller than if you leave it up, you know, for everyone to see.
Right. She's got no money anyway.
And she will continue to have no money.
Yeah.
When you got this hanging over your head.
What's the long-term damage to Calcoast News? Because as I mentioned, I mean, New York Times, Santa Barbara News Press, Rolling Stone, of course, the big one mm-hmm. recently, they all got hit with judgments. They're all still around.
Yeah. I'm not sure how the finances go over at Calcoast News. Listening to, you know, the people that called into your show, it's clear they have their fans.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is going to, you know, cause them to walk away.
Pete's in San Luis on KVEC. Hi, Pete.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. Two things.
Okay.
What does an editor do, such as Bill Loving? He's the editor, right, of Calcoast News?
He's the editor of Calcoast News.
And then the question is, what's an editor responsible for? And my comment is often the spelling and grammar and diction is close to atrocious.
Yep.
On Calcoast News. I'm an avid fan of it.
Right.
But those two, I'm curious about what the editor does, and
yeah.
I don't know why they let so many errors through to the public.
Right. And let me rephrase the question, if I may, Pete. Matt, okay. theoretically,
okay.
What should the editor of Calcoast News be doing?
Well, I'm not sure how Calcoast, because how that's kind of structured. It seems like Karen Vealey is kind of the ultimate boss. She's, you know, the one in charge, and she's also a writer. And she's hired Bill Loving to do editing and whatever else she's asked him to do.
Right.
It's kind of an odd situation. It's not what you'd see in most traditional news.
So in a traditional newspaper, what's the role of the, say, copy editor?
There's editors, there's copy editors. One thing, and this isn't just Calcoast News. It happens with the Tribune. It happens with every single newspaper. Where they have found it's easiest to cut is to get rid of copy editors.
Yeah, I think the Tribune has three now.
And, you know, there's just not enough of them. The Union Tribune, when I worked down there at its height, had on its night copy desk probably 20 copy editors.
Yeah.
Shortly after I was laid off there and that they downsized to two or three.
Pete, to me, the answer is that any copy that Vealey writes needs an editor. And she shouldn't be posting anything
right.
without the sign-off of the editor, whether it's questions about the reporting or the spelling or the syntax. She needs a really good
right.
editor.
Or exposing yeah. you to potential libel lawsuits.
Right. And my experience has been that Karen uses Bill on the big articles, but he's not there on the day-to-day.
Seems like some competent proofreading would be a dramatic improvement.
I'm not disagreeing with you.
And I did that for free for quite a while for him. I see it's still going on, though,
yeah.
that need. Anyway, thank you.
All right, Pete, thank you. Well, I mean, so here's Pete, and we love Pete, but he has nothing to do with journalism. And he just revealed he's been a volunteer copy editor for Cal Coast News. That's not the way it's supposed to be done.
No, it's not. But, you know, shoestring operations, it's you know, if Cal Coast News was making big money, then Karen Vealey would have something for this guy to have gone after. Yeah. And you always buy her lunch, so,
yeah.
You know, it's probably, I'm sure that's her passion, but that's probably a hand-to-mouth sort of journalistic existence.
Yeah. Now, the last part of this, Matt Hoyt, is does the loss and the $1.2 million judgment against her take away from her reporting successes in terms of Kelly Gerhart and John Wallace and Lisa Solomon?
I'm not sure it can ever necessarily take those away, but you know, if there was an aura of invincibility or before, it's not there anymore.
Right.
If there was that aura of that you're always to be trusted, it's not there before. Yeah. It's the same. You know, if you look at what Dan Rather did up until he had those, you know, National Guard documents that had been written on a Microsoft Word, you know, computer. That were supposedly in the 60s with George W. Bush, you know, he did a lot of great stuff before, but he's forever tainted
right. Because
of that.
I think that's the key word. Because now the next time Vealey and Blackburn publish a story that's controversial, people say, oh,
exactly.
You know, it's them again.
Yeah.
You know, we know their track record.
And if they don't have, on the next story, if they don't have all their, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed, and they don't have it's going to encourage their next target to maybe think about suing them again.
But both Slow Stringer and Karen Vealey, if I may make the comparison, do have one thing in common. They were outside the box. They're outside the traditional mainstream local reporting, Matt, and each of them in their own way trying to fill a void.
Certainly.
Slow Stringer with hard news of police, public safety, Vealey with investigative reporting.
Certainly. Absolutely. Yeah, there is a need for that. There's a desire for that. And, you know, the local community is not being as well served as it should be the traditional media outlets, whether that's the Tribune, whether that's KSBY, whether that's, you know, New Times to a lesser extent. I'm not sure how you'd classify them as traditional necessarily.
I was on the website last night for the Tribune. And you know what? And it's not attack on Matt Fountain. I respect Matt's work. But you know what he's listed as his beat?
No.
Investigative reporting. I about gagged. When has a Tribune ever done investigative reporting? That's his beat.
When does he have the time to do it? With all the other stuff he does.
I guess. Anyway, more phone calls, more conversation straight ahead. Matt Hoy is on Hometown Radio. Stick around. Let's just take a second here and invite you, remind you, please, to find us on Facebook at News Talk 920 KVC. By the way, give us a like. Everybody loves to be liked. Also on Twitter at 920 KVEC. I'm Dave Congleton. We're back with former Tribune columnist and ongoing journalist Matthew Hoy, whose website, his blog is?
Hoystory.com, Hoystory.
We're just talking about what's happening, not happening with local journalism. We started off talking about the tragedy of the death of Slow Stringer. Also getting Matt's reaction to the recent verdict against Cal Coast News and the big libel trial. Hello. If you want in on the conversation, pick up the phone, give us a call, 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. If nothing else, I'd be curious about where you get your local news from these days. Are you going to the Tribune? Are you going to New Times, KSBY, News Talk 920, KVEC, KCBX? Where do you get your local news from? Where do you get your local news from, Matt?
It's mostly from the Tribune. I visit Cal Coast News occasionally. I visit the A-Town Daily News, Paso Robles, little paper up there. I look at their website as well.
The old rule of thumb used to be the more educated a person, the more media sources they search out. They just don't rely on one source of news.
I think that would be a bad idea, no matter what your source is.
So let's talk about the Tribune and their code of ethics in your recent blog post.
Yeah, this is something that the Tribune published, I believe, last Saturday or Sunday.
In response to the Cal Coast News verdict.
In response to Cal Coast News. Basically, it was a, look, we're open, look, we're transparent. This is our code of ethics.
Look, we're better.
It was, look, we're better.
Yeah.
We're different. We're not like those fly-by-nighters up there at Cal Coast News and that Cal Poly professor who should have retired apparently a long time ago and aided and abetted this.
So Sandy could have his job.
Yeah. So it's the attack. I've met Bill Loving a couple times. I've had brief conversations with him.
He's a nice guy. I don't know if you knew this, George Ramos was the original editor of Cal Coast News.
Oh, no, I didn't.
And then he tragically died far too young, and not as a courtesy, but Bill Loving stepped in.
Right.
Kind of to honor George Ramos. And that's when he became the editor of Cal Coast News, just to keep the thing going.
When I was at Cal Poly my senior year there back in 1990, I won, along with a fellow student named Len Ahrens, the California Intercollegiate Press Association first place prize for investigative reporting, and George Ramos is the one who presented it to us.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
So so they published this article detailing what their ethics guidelines are, what their rules are, how they gather the news. And as I was reading that, I was struck by, if those are your guidelines, you need to retrain your employees because they are not following them.
What happened?
Well, specifically, the guideline that kind of jumped out at me, she wrote, if we make a mistake, we correct that error immediately online and in print in a transparent way so readers know exactly what we're correcting. Some websites simply change a story to correct the error or unpublish the story. We don't. If an online story is incorrect, we'll add an editor's note to the story that says correction and clearly note what we have corrected. And not a week ago, there was a brief article on a DUI that occurred in downtown SLO right next to the county government building at the intersection of Santa Rosa and Monterey. The original story had a mugshot of someone identified as Aaron Schaefer, who wasn't in the story. There was no Aaron Schaefer in the story, but there's a mugshot there that says Aaron Schaefer. And the story also referred to this guy named Hembry. But in the second paragraph, it just said Hembry. And in the fourth paragraph, it actually had the guy's full name. So a few mistakes. Some of them would have been caught by a copy. All of them probably should have been caught by a copy editor.
But when you only have three copy editors now.
And who's working, the weekend shift, Saturday afternoon. And I noted in the comment, hey, you've made these errors. And who's this Aaron Schaefer guy that you got a mugshot of? And 4 hours later, all of those errors were corrected. The ID on the mugshot was no longer Schaefer, but the guy who was arrested, Hembry. And no note at all that anything had changed. And her guide says, if we make changes online, we're transparent about it. We tell you what we've changed.
But that tells me that somebody probably made the change and didn't bother noting that it had been changed.
Exactly.
Which is what you're supposed to do.
Which is what, according to her, so she needs to train someone.
And some of them are innocent. Sarah Lynn, and we all love Sarah Lynn, had a nice piece about Josh Brolin. I think it was that article at the film festival. Mm-hmm. And she referred to War and Peace, P-I-E-C-E. And I groaned when I read that.
Spell checker won't catch those sorts of mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, so those mistakes happen.
Right.
You don't have to be Karen Vealy to have a typo like that.
And frankly, if it's just a typo, I can kind of understand
kinda
not
keeps
noting
you human.
Everyone. I can understand just fixing that and not noting that you fixed it. If it's a homonym like that, where it's the same word and people knew, but it's a minor correction like this. The story was rewritten. There was another case where that I remembered from a couple months back, and I went and looked this up, prompted by this as well, where the media for one morning for about 3 or 4 hours ran around with its hair on fire because everyone at the State Department had resigned. because of Donald Trump. And this was unprecedented. This had never happened before. And look at how crazy Donald Trump is that everybody resigned. And the Tribune ran that. It was a Washington Post story. And the Tribune ran that story. And I looked at it and, you know, in those early days, my basic thing with anything Donald Trump was take a deep breath, wait 3 or 4 hours to see if it's really what it is or if it's just the media going crazy at anything Donald Trump. Well, 4 hours later, it comes out that, look, this is what happens every 8 years, especially when you've got to change from a Republican to a Democrat administration. All these people just as pro forma submit their resignations. Trump hadn't accepted all of them. He accepted most of them. And this is just something that normally happens all the time. And I kind of commented on the Tribune's article that, hey, this is, I use the term fake news. It's fake news. You guys messed up. It's not the way you're portraying it. And then I come back a few hours later, and to the same URL, I click the same link on their website, and now that Washington Post story isn't there. Instead, there's an Associated Press story co-authored by a guy named Matt Lee, who's an excellent Associated Press reporter. That guy, you know, I've known about him for years. He covers the State Department, and it was much more measured, much more historically knowledgeable, and there's no note that they have switched out articles. You can go to the Internet Wayback Machine, and I've got those links on my blog so you can see what changed. And the fact that they just took this whole article, trashed it, subbed another one in its place, and no note that they did that. And the comments weren't wiped either. So you've got me calling this fake news on an article that I think is good.
Matt Hoy on this broadcast. We're talking primarily about what's happening with local journalism, what's not happening with local journalism. We invite your phone calls for Matt, 543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. And if you don't want to talk about what we're talking about, I'd love to hear from people as to where you're getting your local news from. Where do you go? And the other part of that is where I get a lot of my local news from. I get it off of Facebook. And I'm not talking like Slow Stringer.
Right.
There was a friend of mine who posted something about, does anybody know if this happened? And then that led me to go see if there were local news sources, and the Tribune had the story.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hadn't been on Facebook, I wouldn't have found out what was going on that quickly. I mean, there's another example. So do you get from Facebook? Do you get from the Tribune? Do you get your news from radio? 543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. Is there a bias in local media?
I'm a conservative.
Yeah.
I think there's a liberal bias to a greater or lesser extent in just about all mainstream media. There was an old rule that any kind of nonprofit group that if it wasn't explicitly conservative, it became liberal over time.
Right.
I'm not sure Henry Ford would agree with the politics of the Ford Foundation nowadays and what they fund necessarily. But I think with most newsrooms, most of the people in them are liberal. I think most of them try to do a good job, try to be unbiased, try to play it down the center. I just think that because they're not necessarily exposed to differing views, to conservative views, I don't think they can ever quite make it to the center.
Well, but like in the Tribune case, they have Tom Folks, and now they have Andrea Seastrand.
Who only show up in their newsroom to get their picture taken.
Yeah.
You know,
they're not there on a day-to-day.
Talking about Sandra Dewar. I'm talking about Joe Tirica. I'm talking about, all their reporters. There was an article a few years ago where Sandra Dewar was answering questions from, readers that they had submitted. And she said, I do not know what the politics of any of my reporters or editors are. And frankly, I find that very, 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 very hard to believe. Either she can't read people very well, or she's not being completely honest. Because I can guarantee you, if you just took a camera for 30 seconds at 8 p.m. on election night, 2012 and just swung around the newsroom looking at the expressions on people's faces, kind of their body language, and compared 2012 to election 8 p.m. election night 2016, I think you would see two very different kind of responses to who got elected.
We're with Matt Hoy. We'll come back for a final segment. I'm Dave Congleton. This is AM 920 and FM 96.5. News Talk, KVEC. Top of the hour, it is ABC Radio News. Then we invite you to stick around. Buck Sexton with America Now takes over. Don't forget to start your weekday mornings off with First Look. Andy Morris, Scott Taylor have you covered from 6 to 9. Craig and I will be back tomorrow at 3:05 with the Thursday edition of Hometown Radio. We're in our final segment with local journalist Matt Hoy. We're talking about what's happening, not happening on the local journalism scene. If you want in on this conversation, we need to hear from you now, please. 543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. So far, we've talked a little bit about the untimely death of Slow Stringer. We've talked about the verdict in the Cal Coast News case. We've talked a little bit about the Tribune and their code of ethics. Although, shouldn't we be nice to the Tribune? They're in such tough times. I really feel sorry for some of the people over there.
You know, it's yes and no.
Okay. Why the no?
Because they have a public trust. They need to be held accountable. You know, the First Amendment's a wonderful thing, but you can't just use tough economic times as kind of a coverall excuse for every time they make a mistake. Politicians need to be held accountable.
Yeah, but you make mistakes. I screw up on this show. We all make mistakes.
And we're held accountable for them.
Yeah.
You get, if you make a big enough mistake, management will probably come to talk to you.
I've made a couple.
I make mistakes. My clients, my bosses come to talk to me. If you never get feedback, whether bad or good, you're never going to know what you're doing right, never know what you're doing wrong, and you're never going to improve. And a lot of this is, frankly, it's tough love. I love newspapers. I love the media.
Right.
I love journalism. And because I love journalism and I want it to succeed, I want it to meet its highest aspirations as far as quality, as far as ethics go. Because I want those things, that's why I criticize it.
And yet I would say, Matt, that the ultimate boss or the readers, the viewers, the listeners, if they don't like something, they cancel their subscription, they stop reading, they stop listening, and the numbers come up like, oh, we got to make some changes. Look, we're losing our audience. Isn't that a way to keep people?
That's probably the only way you've got to keep people accountable, frankly. And the sad thing is you can get into kind of a death spiral with that going. If enough people cancel their subscriptions, well, then maybe they can't hire that copy editor that they need. Or maybe they've got to lay off one of the few copy editors they have. Or you lose a journalist. It's not easy, but it's the way the market gives feedback. And this is all market-based. KVEC is not NPR. You're not getting federal funding.
And yeah, but like KCBX doesn't take any federal funding locally. But like TV, KSBY, in the old days, you'd send out a producer, a camera person, and a reporter. Now you got one person does all three things.
Yep.
I remember the Tribune. I'm visualing the copy desk, Matt, and there'd be eight. They call them copy dogs. There were eight copy dogs on the desk. And when I looked at the list last night, I think I saw three names. Mm-hmm. So they make up more than 50%. And those are the people who proofread,
yeah,
who ask the questions. Hey, this story is not clear in the story. They check the spelling.
And I bet you those three people are also doing some of those, by Tribune editorial staff stories, those little briefs and whatnot that fill up the little nooks of crayons paper. I bet you those people are doing that as well.
And when we start, when I started at KVEC, there was the morning news, there was the noon news watch from noon to 1 o'clock, and then there was also the evening news from 5 to 6. And there were three different people doing those three newscasts. And then when they weren't doing the newscasts, they were out reporting. Well, we don't have any reporters now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have one morning newscast from 6 to 9. And then if there's any big news in the afternoon, I'm supposed to mention it. But we have no reporters. And we're probably the only station left, commercial station, that's doing any extensive local coverage of anything.
Yes, and frankly, that's one of the things I like about KVEC, and it would be a tragedy if that ever went away.
Rico's in Los Osos on KVEC. Hey, Rico.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Quick question, clarification on some information I had in regards to something that your person just said there about Henry Ford. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I was told that, or I've seen stuff on Facebook or somewhere, that Henry Ford received the highest honor from Hitler that a non-German could receive, and yet he's looked at as a hero of America. I've kind of always questioned that. If it's true, correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know if it's true. I just know that he was kind of a pro-business guy, and the Ford Foundation, which he founded, now, you know, 70, 80 years later, is not at all pro-business and is not probably what his views were.
Rico, do you don't think Henry Ford is one of the giants of American industry?
He's referred to that way a lot, and since I learned that information, it's kind of turned my head around about what makes everything tick. And if your guest doesn't know that, I think you should check it out and find out if it is true, and if it's not, announce it. So
if that's true, how does that take away from anything Matt said about Henry Ford?
It sounded as though he was praising him as a scholar or a whatever. You know, I find him a dirtbag if he was a Hitler's buddy.
All I was pointing out was the axiom that is something. If a
just find out if that's true. That's all. That's the only reason why I called.
All right, Rico. Yeah, you have homework. Go ahead and respond.
All I was pointing out was the axiom that any kind of charitable foundation over time becomes, if it is not explicitly conservative, it becomes liberal.
So you were just quoting Henry Ford.
I wasn't even quoting Henry Ford. I was using his foundation as an example.
Yeah. So you weren't defending Henry Ford.
No.
Although one easily could, but that could be another show. Welcome to my world. If you want to end the conversation, we need to hear from you now, please. 543-8830, 1-800-549-5832. Matthew Hoy on this broadcast, his website is?
Hoystory.com, HOYSTORY.com.
Are we going to have any local media 5 years from now?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it will necessarily be printed. I think I think by the time I am ready to retire, which won't be 65, but will probably be quite a bit past that, because I don't think Social Security is going to be there for me. But by the time I'm ready to retire, I'm not sure we'll have newspapers per se. I think tablets and whatnot are going to be so ubiquitous that I don't think we're going to have daily newspapers. I was reading an Isaac Asimov book couple of years ago. And one of the things I found interesting was, you know, here's Asimov writing sci-fi in the 60s, in 50s and 60s, and he imagines the presses of this newspaper running 24 hours a day, always putting out a new edition and printing, you know, millions of copies. And I can see the end of a printed newspaper from here. And here is a sci-fi thinker who couldn't imagine that.
I just see all the traditional media that I grew up on, and to some extent you did, just being not phased about, but replaced. So I grew up on a newspaper. Now my newspaper is going to be on my laptop. It's still going to be news,
yep,
but it's not going to be a newspaper. Radio will continue, maybe not as a radio, maybe streaming.
Podcasts.
But there's still going to be shows like this available for people throughout the country.
Yes.
So media constantly reinvents itself, right, Matt?
Yeah, I think one of the problems that newspapers had the past decade was they kept on focusing on the paper part and not the news part.
All right, Matthew Hoy, thank you for coming in again. Your website, your blog is?
Hoystory.com.
Let me know if you hear back from Sandy Doerr.
I will. I'm not going to hold my breath.
You should join Wednesday Rotary. That's the best place to find her.
Is that the best place to find
her? She's sitting right next to John Wallace. I'm going to get in so much trouble. All right, Matt, final thoughts.
You know, the media needs to live up to its aspirations, and the statement of code of ethics that the Tribune published this past weekend is a very good one. Now they need to follow it.
All right, sir. Thank you. We're going to thank Sandra Underwood and Kevin Campion and Father Daniel, David Holmes and Andy Greensfelder, Matt Hoy. Thanks to Craig Hill, and thanks to you as well for listening. We'll see you tomorrow at 3:05. I'm Dave Congleton. Now, Una, Toby, Daisy, Jane, and little Gus, get off the couch, get out the leashes. I'm coming home. Take care.